Hey there, it's Michelle Norris. I'm host of a podcast called Your Mama's Kitchen. When I travel, I'm usually looking for a way to find a taste of home when I'm not at home. And one of the things I love to do when I am at home is entertain. And Airbnb allows me to do that. When I was in California recently, I rented a house that had a great kitchen. And when we were sitting around the table, we're all thinking, we're in someone else's house. Someone could be in all of our homes as well. If you have a home, but you're not always at home, you have an Airbnb. Your home might be worth more than you think. Find out how much at airbnb.com/host.
And it's a Friday, so that must mean it is time to check in with tonight's resident TV, film, streaming critic, man of the silver screen, in fact, the human embodiment of cinema, Dan Slevin. Kia ora to you, Dan.
Kia ora, Emil. That is the most wonderful introduction. Thank you very much.
You're very welcome. Let's hop straight to it, because you're in cinemas film. You actually wrote about this in your newsletter today, and it looks so interesting. Tell us about it. It's called Origin.
Yeah, it is. It's extremely interesting, and I hope that I can do it justice here, because it there's a complexity to it and a rigor to it, which I think is very rare in films today. It's called Origin, and it's written and directed by the black female director Ava DuVernay. She made Selma a few years ago, and it's about, and it's sort of inspired by and based on a book that came out in 2020 called Caste: The Origins of Our Discontents, by an academic called Isabel Wilkerson. And DuVernay doesn't just adapt the book, which would have to be done in kind of a documentary style. She makes a film about how the book came to be and centers Wilkerson as a character in it. So it's sort of about how the topic came to her and then how she researched it. And it also heads off into history to recreate some of the stories that Wilkerson tells in the book. And the book is essentially about racism and bigotry, topics that are very much top of mind for Black Americans. But it takes an interesting angle on it, because it tries to, I guess, stretch out the idea of racism and the idea of bigotry to find out sort of where it might have come from and what motivates it. What I'd like to do is play a little bit of the trailer, because that will give you, I guess, a little bit of flavor to it. And then maybe when after that, we can get into the meat and drink of it.
Sure.
If you look closely, you'll find something tragic was happening.
Are you interested in writing something for us?
I don't do assignments anymore.
Yeah, well, you're a better writer than most people do anything. Have you heard the tapes?
No. Of what?
Stafford Police Department, this is Sean.
Hey, we've had some break-ins in my neighborhood, and there's a real suspicious guy. It looks like he's up to no good or something.
I want to be in the story, really inside the story, and build a thesis that shows how all of this is linked.
I gotta be honest with you, I don't understand. I don't see it.
You go and write your stories. Folks need to know about this.
You're trying to make sense of racism, but your thesis is flawed.
It was all lies. They knew we weren't inferior.
Oh boy, there's some lush sound production to that. It sounds like a fascinating movie, but it, as we've discussed here before, there's only so much that you can garner from a trailer, Dan. Let's get into the meat and potatoes. What did you make of it?
Sure. Well, I really appreciated it, and I really, there were moments in it where I went, oh my God, I've just never thought about these issues in quite the same way. So what she's doing is she's drawing parallels between sort of the kind of racism that black people in America experience, which is very obvious based on how you look kind of bigotry, anti-Semitism, which is not necessarily based on how you look. In America, Jewish people are considered to be white by most people. So that's an added complexity to things. And then she also looks at India and the caste system there and the Dalits or the untouchables who are generation upon generation treated appallingly by the rest of Hindu India. And what she also then does is draws that out into why we have this bigotry. What purpose does it serve the people who are the bigots? And it seems to me that that kind of racism or bigotry is a tool rather than an end in itself. It's a tool for the kind of domination over other people that human beings like to exercise, but it's also a kind of tool of capitalism. Like colonialism was essentially a capitalist exercise, and when people essentially want other people's stuff, in order to legitimize that theft, if you like, they have to find a way to justify it. You know, they have to be able to sleep at night. So you've got in Nazi Germany in the 1930s, they attempt to try and create a legal framework for what they're going to do to the Jews because they're civilized people, right? They're not just going to go around bashing people up. There's going to be laws around it. And in order to create those laws, they went to the American legal system and the Jim Crow laws of the American South. And that was the inspiration for the legal framework around how they treated the Jews. And we see that watching the film, I was reminded of the Sandra Hüller character in The Zone of Interest, the wife of the Auschwitz commandant. And, you know, she essentially doesn't think about the Jews over the wall at all. You know, she just wants their stuff, and she wants their stuff in order to be able to live the affluent life that she thinks she's entitled to. And it's in Origin, there's a really interesting conversation between the author and one of her friends at a barbecue. And she says, did the slave owners think that the slaves were less than human? And her friend says, well, yeah, they did. And then she says, yeah, but the author, Toni Morrison, says, if they thought we were less than human, why did they let us look after their kids? Mm-hmm. You know, it's like, so it's not that the bigots and the racists genuinely think that the people around them are subhuman or inferior. It's just that's a lie they tell themselves in order to be able to do the awful things that they really want to do, which is just take their stuff or exercise dominion over them. Mm. So anyway, there was just so much in it to think about, and I'm not even necessarily sure that I'm 100% in agreement with all of the thesis that is in the film, but I would really love to be around people discussing it afterwards. I think it's one of those films that should get people talking.
Yeah, really thought-provoking, it looks like. You had a great line in your newsletter, The Funeral of the Snakes, it's called, which echoes some of the sentiments that you were talking about just before. To quote you back to yourself, which is always uncomfortable, but I'm going to do it nonetheless, dehumanization is kind of a smokescreen. Racists don't necessarily believe that their victims are lesser beings. They just tell themselves that because it makes their choices easier to live with. And those choices are mostly about something as simple as you have something and I want it, greed, and capitalism, which I guess is hitting on the exact points that you've been talking about. I just thought that those lines summarized that sentiment really pithily. I thought it was really interesting reading your take on that.
Yeah, sometimes I put words together in the right order, and not always. But the other thing is that motivates this sort of attitude is fear. So it's not just necessarily that people want to exercise their dominion over other people or take their stuff. It's that they're worried that those people are going to come and take their stuff, you know, and that's also a fear. But it's a really primal sort of fear, I think.
Yeah.
Your streaming recommendation this week, this looks interesting. It's on Apple TV Plus. It's called Constellation. Tell us about it.
Okay, this one is another of Apple TV's big science fiction-y things. They seem to specialize in this sort of futuristic science fiction, science fantasy stuff. And it's got that classic Apple TV kind of classiness about it. There's a lot of taste being exercised here. This is the story of the International Space Station and an astronaut from Sweden who's on that space station, and there's an accident on board. And she is left behind because there's no room on the escape pods for her. And then when she finally makes it back to Earth, the Earth that she comes back to isn't quite the same as the one that she left. And when she brings this up, the people around her, her family, her bosses think that she's just had a sort of case of post-space trauma or something, post-traumatic space trauma, and want to give her medication. But she starts to realize that there's all sorts of other odd things going on that are unexplained. We'll have a little bit of the trailer, which, again, trailers, as you just mentioned, Emil, not always that useful, but this will give you some flavor anyway.
Mommy! I'm very happy to be back home. But things are different. I have a piano in my house, and I don't play the piano.
Do you have hallucinations?
Mama?
Yeah.
Astronauts go through things they don't understand. That's when people come unstuck.
When I was up there, the only thing I could focus on was getting back to my daughter.
I miss you, Mummy. Will you be careful up there?
Mummy, who was that?
That was you and me right before the accident.
That was not me.
Oh, no, that was a dynamite trailer. And I love this. I just like the premise of this. It looks terrific, that sort of open-ended uncertainty. You don't know who to believe. You don't know if anybody's, you know, trustworthy. This is right up my alley, Dan.
It's got all of that going on, but it also uses quantum physics and quantum mechanics and quantum science the way that most fiction does. Is because it's so complex and unknowable, it basically treats it as a kind of magic. And that means you can, as a writer, you can kind of do anything if you blame it on quantum physics. You know what I mean?
Exactly.
And so there's quite a lot of that going on. We enjoyed it at our house, and we watched it sort of episode by episode, week by week, over time, rather than binging it. I would say that it's 8 episodes long, and it could easily have been 6. Mm-hmm. Like, the 2 in the middle, we're thinking, oh, have we made a wrong move harnessing ourselves to this show? But it does pay off. Noomi Rapace, if I've got that pronunciation correctly, plays Joe, who's the lead. One of my favorite actors, Jonathan Banks, plays 2 characters in this show. You'll know him from Breaking Bad and Better Call Saul, and it's always nice to see him on screen. And it's directed by Michelle McLaren, who directed a lot of Breaking Bad and Better Call Saul, which is, I think, where that connection comes from. But one of the other directors is the great German director Oliver Hirschbiegel, who is probably most famous for directing Downfall, the last days of Hitler.
The Hitler film, yeah. Wow, that sounds really interesting. Hey, just quickly before we get on to your final pick, have you been watching Shogun?
No, I haven't yet. We've been waiting for it all to finish, and then I think that's one that we will probably blitz through in a couple of weeks. But I've been reading some of the responses to it, and people are really loving it. Yeah. So I think that's definitely going to be on the list in the next few weeks.
I'd love to discuss that with you once you've watched that. All right, your free option this week, Paris Can Wait, it's called.
Yeah, Paris can wait. I wanted to talk about this because I wanted to mention Eleanor Coppola, who wrote and directed that film. She passed away last week. She was 87 years old and the wife of Francis Ford Coppola. And she was 80 when she made Paris Can Wait, her debut feature film. And it's a lovely sort of fairly slight romantic story about a wife of a film producer who is left to her own devices in France for a few days, and his producing partner drives her around, and there's a sort of frisson of potential sort of relationship between them. It is quite slight, but it is very pleasant. Diane Lane's in it, and I just thought it was an interesting exercise for somebody at the age of 80 to jump into making a feature film of her own, having been around her husband's for so long. The other film that she is probably best known for is the documentary that she made about her Apocalypse Now, Francis Ford Coppola's film Apocalypse Now, called Hearts of Darkness. Yeah. And you can rent one on Arrowvision. But Paris Can Wait is on Māori TV Plus.
Great stuff. Hearts of Darkness, absolutely wild. One of the great documentaries, it's fair to say.
Yeah, and she is just such an interesting person, and spent so much of her life basically supporting Francis, and it makes you wonder what she might have done if she'd branched out on her own earlier.
Mm-hmm. Great stuff. Dan Sleven, thanks so much. Nice having you on.
My pleasure.
It's Dan Sleven, movie man. Coming up after the 10 o'clock news, we are going to get the latest on the situation in Iran. That's before Thomas McLean from Otago University comes on to chat about Lord Byron. Speaking of movies, Bonnie went and saw Civil War a couple of days ago. Did you like it, Bonnie? Yeah, Bonnie's given us the nod. Yeah, I haven't seen that yet, and I don't have any tickets booked in, but you can be sure that once I have, I'll tell you what I thought.
Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.